flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Cavs lost a close one to Houston yesterday. There was many discussions about what Houston got away with, the officiating, Darius's clutch stats, all that and more, and to talk about that, and of course, the Cavaliers about halfway through the season, we're going to head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline and welcome on senior NBA writer for The Ringer, Howard Beck. Howard, welcome to the show.
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Well, it's great to talk to you here. About halfway through the season, the Cavs still have the best record in the NBA. Does that mean you think they are a true NBA contender?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I think it was fair for people to be a little bit cautious early in the season, right? Like, they had a little bit of a soft schedule at the beginning. Even the Cavs would acknowledge that. And so they get out to a really fast start, and it's kind of eye-opening. But they're the same team that we've seen the last couple of years be just good, you know, good to good enough, right? Like, you know, hey, solid regular season, losing the first round or something. Still wondering if the pieces fit right and all of this. And so I think the skepticism, or maybe not even skepticism, but just caution, was understandable in November, maybe into December. But when you get to, like, I don't know, can we consider this late January now? I think it's late January, the 23rd. You're in late January. You've got the best record, or tied for the best record in the NBA. You're flirting with a 70-win type season. It's definitely a strong possibility. There's no reason to think that that they won't at least. I mean, listen, if they don't get to 70 wins, and right now I think they're on pace for 68, it'll be because they, you know, some guys get banged up, or they start being cautious with their starters down the stretch or something. But whatever the record ends up being, it's going to be in the 60s. 60-win range is always, I think, historically defined a contender, right? Anything over 50 is good. High 50s is great. Over 60, you are absolutely in championship contention. And I think the only thing, if you're wondering, like, well, how legit are they? How deep can they go? I think it's still fair to say, well, the Celtics are defending champs and are pretty much intact. And, they, you know, they've gone through some weird stuff the last few weeks, but I kind of chalk most of that up to championship hangover type stuff. I think they'll be fine. So that's really the question. To me, the question is not, are the Cavaliers a potential title contender, or are they capable of winning the East? The answer on both of those is yes, but it's going to come down to whenever they finally meet up with the Celtics, assuming that happens in the spring, are they good enough to beat them 4 out of 7 times? And I'm not giving short shrift to the Knicks or the Bucks or whoever else may emerge, but I think it's right now, those are the two teams you have to concentrate on. And if you're the Cavs, obviously you're concentrating on how to get past the defending champs.
Howard, what has surprised you the most about this Cavs season so far?
Just how dominant they've been. Like, listen, I'm a big Kenny Atkinson guy. I've known Kenny since he was an assistant coach on Mike D'Antoni's staff with the Knicks many years ago when I was covering the Knicks as a beat writer. I'm here in Brooklyn where Kenny got his first head coaching job up the road from me with the Nets. I know what he's about. I know, you know, and listen, like there's been a lot of assistant coaches I've known over the couple of decades, three decades that I've been doing this. It doesn't always translate. You never know. Guys who I thought had great aptitude, personality, leadership, communication skills, all that, it doesn't always work. So you don't know. But Kenny's somebody who I've known a long time, and I thought, you know, when he gets another shot after, you know, bouncing around as an assistant in a couple places, obviously most recently with the Warriors, I thought that he would be great for them. And it's no knock on J.B. Bickerstaff, who, of course, is doing a fantastic job in Detroit now. Like, he got them to a certain point, and he got them established as a high-level defensive team. But, sometimes you just need a different set of eyes and a different philosophy to come in. And what Kenny, I think, brought to the table, having coached under Steve Kerr, under Mike D'Antoni, under Tyronn Lue, under several others, I think there was just kind of an offensive philosophy that was really about, as with the Warriors, just ball and player movement. Not so much ISO, not so much just straight pick and roll where it becomes a little bit too predictable and easier to defend. And I think that that's what's opened things up. So, you know, look, a natural leap from Evan Mobley, a natural leap from Darius Garland, but also an offensive philosophy where they're really trying to leverage all four of their star caliber players to set each other up and to keep the ball moving and to keep defenses off balance more. And then obviously credit to Donovan Mitchell for being willing to sacrifice some of his game to allow that to open up too. But I'm only surprised at the level. Like, I thought they would be good. I thought they might even be great. I thought they would be better than they had been last season. Nobody predicted that they were going to be on a 68-70 win pace. Like, nobody saw that coming.
Howard, to look at that core four, and you mentioned, you know, unlocking all the core four together, and, you know, Donovan obviously is the biggest star on the team, gets a lot of credit. Evan Mobley is a guy that, you know, NBA dudes have loved for a really long time, his upside since he was taken third overall at a USC. And Darius has kind of been lost in the shuffle, certainly after last year with some of the credit. But he's made mention about, you know, he wanting to be an all-star this year. He thinks that the core four together should be all-star. How much credit do you give Darius out of the core four for what they've done?
Yeah, I mean, they're almost inextricable from each other. It's hard to you know, and it's funny, too, because, right, we're going to hear who is starting the all-star game tonight, right? That'll be announced on TNT tonight, who got voted into as all-star starters. And as one of the people with the ballot on the media side, we account for 25% of that whole vote. I was debating between Mitchell and Garland for the second spot. I had you know, Jalen Brunson penciled into one of them, and I knew it was going to be one of the Cavs guards. And you can go round and round on this chicken and egg thing where it's like, well, Garland's like efficiency is actually quite a bit ahead of Mitchell's. And so in a lot of ways, Darius Garland's having the better season. And I think as a playmaker too. But then you go back and say, well, but he can do that because Donovan Mitchell has given him, first of all, Donovan Mitchell's the first focus of the defense every night. He's taking on the brunt of things. He is kind of the leader based on, you know, just talent and experience and just standing. And so he Garland can't do what he's doing, I don't think, without Mitchell, but that can go vice versa too. So you, like I say, it's a chicken and egg thing here. They both deserve a ton of credit. And again, I will say it outright. I was skeptical that this backcourt could work long-term or just that it could work at a really high level because they're undersized. They're both guys who are used to having the ball in their hands a lot as both scorers and playmakers. Garland had just become an all-star right before Donovan Mitchell got there. And I thought, well, this guy needs room to keep growing and how's that going to work? But it has worked. I mean, and I'm not the only one who was skeptical. You could find scouts, mm-hmm. coaches, GMs around the league. There was reason to wonder, and I mean, all credit to them. They have done it, and we'll see how far this goes. But it's been fantastic, and so, you know, give them all the credit. Like, you know, they each have a piece of that.
Yeah, I mean, Howard, you were not the only one that was skeptical. You know, there, it was the debate around here was, do you break up the two bigs or do you break up the two guards? And everyone just kind of was choosing their sides between that. But everyone believed you couldn't do all of it, what they're doing, except for Kobe Altman. And Altman obviously ran it back. So does that speak more to the idea that we're just playing more positionless basketball? Like, why is it working when everyone said it couldn't work?
That's a great question. So there were two reasons to think it might not work, right? A little bit of overlap in the guards, a little bit of overlap in the bigs, and especially when Mobley wasn't much of a knockdown threat from outside before. So part of this is just like guys making progress individually, right? Evan Mobley's a better three-point. He's not doing it in volume, but he's a better, more reliable three-point shooter now. And because Jared Allen is not, hey, cool, now you've got two complementary bigs because at least one of them can draw the defense out with. If they're both non-shooters, that can create problems in today's NBA. The guard part of it, again, is you just have to have two guys who are both willing to give up some of their control and their usage of the offense. So the fact that everybody's been willing is a big part of why it's worked. Evan Mobley evolving his game, as you would hope, you know, a high-level pick was going to do anyway. That's part of it. I think Kenny Atkinson's offense and his philosophy is part of it. It's a lot of things. It's everything. It also, by the way, didn't hurt that when Atkinson got there, he immediately gets to pick up where he left off with Jared Allen and Caris LeVert, two guys who he had coached with the Nets when the Nets became, you know, this you know, competitive beyond expectation team when they were in a rebuilding mode, you know, several years ago. And those are guys who had thrived under Kenny Atkinson before, which, you know, probably at least gave him a little bit of a foothold. Like, they're not as critical to the success as the backcourt guys, but they were, you know, players who I think, you know, Kenny already had a credibility with and, you know, could walk in on day one and have some familiarity.
Howard Beck of the Ringer on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So, on one hand, Kenny Atkinson has kind of stated publicly and you know, talked about how fair it is to talk about how the Cavs struggle against big wings. And on the other hand, reports say the Cavs don't want to touch their top eight in trying to improve this roster. Should the Cavs be clinging to their top eight as is, or should they be more open to maybe trying to find a couple big wings?
It's tough because the best of the big wings, and you know, the one that comes to mind immediately, of course, is back in my backyard again, Cam Johnson with the Nets, who, you know, is you know, certainly available for the right price right now. But he's going to cost, you know, he's going to cost assets. And then there's also just the salary part of it. And the Cavs are in a position now where the other thing that has caused some skepticism, I think, across the league about this group is that it's really hard under this collective bargaining agreement, under this salary cap, to have four max or max-ish guys, right? Like, eventually you hit the second apron and you become the Suns where, and it's different, obviously you've got younger players, but when you become the Suns where all of a sudden you're really hamstrung about adding more players. So bringing in another high salary, even a sub-max salary, whether it were Cam Johnson or somebody else, it's just difficult. And it becomes more and more unwieldy. You have less room for error. If a guy gets hurt, it's hard to replace guys. So I don't know if it's practical for them to make a big move right now, and I'm not entirely positive they need to. Like, could they upgrade at small forward? Sure. But they've got a good rotation of guys who can bring a little defense and shooting. And chemistry is a funny thing in the NBA, too. Like, sometimes you should leave well enough alone. Like, you could look and say, oh, maybe there's a better option out there at this one spot. But if it costs you guys who were, like, really important part of just, you know, the locker room culture or the personality of the team, sometimes you don't want to pull on those threads. So I could certainly make the case that they should just, you know, be confident in who they are and what they have right now and then see how far it goes, right? Like, this is the first time we've seen this Cavs team play at this level. Maybe just let it ride, you know, barring injury or something else that would force you to make a move. See how far you can take it. See if you're ready to knock off the Celtics. And if it doesn't happen, you've got the offseason to figure out what else you can do.
Howard, I got to ask about last night's game. Darius is 90% free throw shooter this year. He misses the first two out of three at the line, and the Cavs lose 109-108. I don't know if you want to call it choking, but when you have a 90% free throw shooter when the game's on the line and he misses two out of three, what do you call it?
I don't know. Nerves, maybe. Listen, I was there at a couple of the games when the Cavs and Knicks played in the playoffs. What was that, two springs ago? And I did think that Garland and Mobley at that time in their first playoff appearance in the NBA both had a little bit of deer in headlights going on. But they were young. It was their first time in the playoffs. The Garden is really intense. But you like, I think you just have to go through some of those moments. And like last night, yeah, it's just a regular season game against the Rockets. But, you know, these guys are human. You're going to have moments like that. Like, I started my career covering the NBA, covering the Lakers of Shaq and Kobe. I watched Kobe miss critical free throws a couple times, too. It happens. So I wouldn't chalk it up to much. I don't care whether it's calling it choking or whatever, just nerves. But, like, it happens. It happens even to the best players in the NBA.
Howard, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you. Keep killing it at the Ringer, and talk to you down the line.
Appreciate it, fellas. Thank you.
Howard Beck there of the Ringer on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. We have yet to get into, to this point, the Darius performance last night against the Rockets. We'll get into that next at 3:22 on 92.3 The Fan. The Cavs lost a close one to the Rockets last night, and in doing so, Şengün hit his free throws. Darius Garland missed 2 of 3. The only two I believe he's missed in clutch situations this year out of 15 attempts, and that led to people talking and having the same conversation about Darius. Did he choke? And Darius's clutch factor.
I mean, it is a theme of Darius, though, is that we've talked about in the playoffs before, and when we try to replicate the biggest moments or the biggest games, I should say, because I don't love... If you're throwing the clutch stats out there today, it is wildly disingenuous, and you know what you're doing if you're doing that.
Defending a player who's really, really good and has actually made big shots this year?
No, because the clutch stat is very, very faulty.
Okay, but it's at least an attempt to address something, as opposed to he just doesn't have the clutch gene, which is... you've at least got a with a clutch versus...
The problem is it's such tiny sample size, and like you can find this for anybody. Like earlier today, Steph Curry with 50 seconds left in a game in the fourth quarter is 0 for 12 on three-pointers. It's a real number. You can look it up. It exists. Like you can find it for just about anybody. I found LeBron's numbers clutch stats.
I'm curious. Like what are people doing if they're mentioning clutch stats?
No, you shouldn't be mentioning clutch stats, is the whole point.
But if you're bringing
clutch stats into it, It is a wildly disingenuous stat.
Well, but isn't the conversation about the clutch gene in itself a relatively weaponized and occasionally disingenuous conversation?
It can be, but I think the difference here is that clutch stat alone, in my opinion, that clutch stat alone takes an account for a game against Washington, meaning the exact same as a game against the Rockets, a game against the Raptors, meaning the exact same as a game against the Celtics.
Which is how people statistically would look at that.
But the problem with Darius is it's never been a conversation about whether he could do it with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter against a bad NBA team. The problem has been with Darius is, does he do it when the stage is the brightest? Does he do it when the teams you're playing are the very best? And that's why I feel like it's trafficking in an area that I just wouldn't traffic in.
I just think the wild thing about what you're saying is Darius hit a huge three to pull them ahead by two last night within 2 minutes.
Hold on, I haven't even said anything one way or another.
No. Like
that was a free lesson for Darius. I'm not making a big deal about it, and I didn't say he choked or anything.
Yeah, I don't know why you're getting defensive, but I think my point is, speaking to the conversation, it's so weird to put it all on the two free throws when you got back into that game because of a huge shot for Darius within 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's so funny, like the choke conversation, I get that the last two free throws, the three free throws came last, but I don't know how that supersedes within 2 minutes hitting the big shot to put you up by two. You know what I mean?
You think they wash? Is that the point?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're both really important. You know, like
they can be.
So to me, the Darius discourse is just wild. Now, knowing where I was, you know, 3 years ago where I said, you know, I don't want to give up Darius for Donovan, but if I had to, I probably would. And knowing the fury that created, to then watch the conversation evolve last year where he didn't become a villain, but there were some villain things there with how people viewed him, to this year, I mean, the dude's been fantastic, and he has taken over four or five games of your wins, he has been your closer, and he's been the reason you've won. So I guess, so it's not to say, that was awful last night. You can't miss free throws, especially if you're a 90% free throw shooter. But there does seem to be a contingency of people who continue to linger on last year and linger on the playoffs. And I just don't know that that's, like, I don't put last night on the level of OKC or Boston. That's a really good team in Houston. They are.
It's a good team. No, but, I don't think they're on the level of OKC or Boston. But it was an important moment. For sure it was.
Yeah, but I don't...
I don't think people need to hang on to it forever. It feels like a lesson. That's all it was. For me, it was a lesson. It was like, all right.
What's the lesson? I'm curious.
The lesson was you got to have a big-time moment. You didn't live up to it, but that's a learning experience for you. Like, that's a... In my opinion, that is... It's one of those games that is in that area that you get very few opportunities in the regular season to have that you can say, okay, that replicated what you'll have in a postseason game. And so he didn't pass that test. It doesn't mean he won't pass the test in the postseason. It just means last night you get to learn from it.
So to cycle back to that, then what do we count with that three-pointer then with 2 minutes to go?
No, that counts. That was a big shot.
No, I'm just trying to figure it out because I don't think you're doing this, so I don't want to make it seem I am.
I'm not, no.
I just the Darius discourse is in a really weird spot for me. He's an all-star. He has been fantastic this year. I kind of think that the big shot with 2 minutes cancels out the two free throws. You're not in that spot without Darius. So
if we're being honest about it, I was more mad about Donovan taking the shot with 4.5 seconds left than anything.
Yeah, I mean, I was more troubled with them with their response to physicality last night, and I think they lived a little bit in it, and I think that benefited Houston.
Yeah, I mean, Şengün bullied the hell out of him.
And they were right. Like, yeah, a lot of those things were foul. The Jared thing was a clear foul, and I don't know how you don't call that. At the same point, you don't control the refs. You don't control the calls. You control your reaction to it.
I got so much of that ref Zoom call where it seems like he's making a Zoom call.
Yeah.
I got way too much of that in the final 2 minutes of that game last night. That was so annoying.
It was the ref show. What was it? Four reviews?
Yeah, Donovan admitted to the call, and then they still, the Cavs challenge, and they're like, okay, Cavs, you're right here.
Yeah.
So, Donovan admitted it was a foul.
So that was a weird game last night. And it's so funny, like, I almost throw the whole game out. Because there were just so many fluky things. You clearly are not 100% right now. Guys are not where they need to be. That's a fair conversation. But Şengün getting away with stuff you don't get away with in 90% of games. Darius missing two free throws.
You probably shouldn't have been in the game to begin with anyway, if we're being honest about it. You go enter the fourth quarter, you're down 11. You had a 19-0 run in a 7-minute stretch where the Rockets didn't hit a single basket. It's just like, that type of thing doesn't happen. And it wasn't because it was great defense. I'd love to be like the Cavs played great defense in that 7-minute stretch. The Rockets just were launching threes and just missing them.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so we talked a lot about this. That was an IQ test, and the Rockets didn't pass. But no, I mean, I kind of came away from that game thinking that I didn't have a negative feeling on Darius. I do think, like, the bigger picture conversation, listen, it's fair to say, can you do it in the playoffs? There's just so few regular season games that you can answer to what happens in the playoffs. And even then, like, I tend to believe when it comes to undersized guards, I tend to think that they're a product of their environment more than anybody on the court because they have, I mean, it's just such a long and active NBA now and athletic beyond means and skilled beyond means. Like, even then when it comes to Darius, like,
yeah,
okay, we're talking about Darius in this context. Well, the Cavs haven't done anything to make the context around him better. So I already kind of am going at this with a, even if this game did matter, well, the problem 3 years ago with these two dudes and how you shut them down is the same thing, and they were just able to do that at points last night.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I expected last night for me to have a different emotion. I expected after he missed the free throws, because, you know, I care about the regular season games. I do. I know I am very much a I'll see you in the postseason, but I like getting excited for these games. But mm-hmm. I was surprised. I thought it was going to be kind of like a reaction you have after, you know, if Class A blows game 39 to the Red Sox in the ninth. You're like, well, let's get fired up and talk about what happened. And that stunk for X amount of reasons why. That might be the closest you can come to blowing a game in the NBA, that exact situation. But I just didn't have it. And I think it's because Darius was so good. I think it's because that fourth quarter, they did fight back. They mm-hmm. clawed their way into the game. They were in a spot they probably shouldn't have been in that 19-0 run. And I just didn't have the same enthusiasm to go ahead and be like, this is all on Darius. Like, Darius is trying to make a play, and a 90% free throw shooter isn't going to miss those often. And I'm just willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, which I think is a growing spot for me and Darius.
Yeah, and I think, and by the way, I think you're right. Like, I thought some of the criticism I heard of him was just like, what are we doing here?
Well, but even to the clutch stat stuff, like, he doesn't need that defense.
Yeah.
Even if I don't agree with the defense, he doesn't need that defense.
Well, but okay, in the same stat, we're not holding Evan to the same level. If Evan misses two or three free throws and you lose, we're not doing the meltdown. Is he clutch? Is he not? Right? If Donovan does it, we sure as hell aren't doing it. And by the way, Donovan being clutch in the playoffs has been a huge conversation to a ridiculous point. But, you know, it's just weird.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I just think the Darius discourse, I think you're closer to where I am, which is, hey, he played a hell of a game. You're not anywhere close to being in that game, if not for his 26 points. He made a big shot late in that game. He just didn't miss the two gimmies. Okay. All right. Not ideal, but not like this. It does feel like there's this knee-jerk reaction, and I really do think it's tied to last year. I still think it's tied to the trade demand. Did he demand a trade? Did he not? I still think for some people out there, there's a, I don't know if you're all the way in with the Cavs. It's almost like he's become the new Donovan, right? Where it's like, well, I want to love you.
But we also kind of wonder if you're 1 foot out the door in many respects.
And some of that's fair with some of the stuff we've talked about with credit. But my reaction was the same as yours last night. I kind of aw shucksed it and then was like, all right, I guess we're on to, don't we have Washington next? I guess we're on to Washington. Okay. All right.
Yeah, and I was the one before the game trying to hype it up and trying to make it a big deal and make it a big game. And it's just when it actually went down, I really do think, a lot of Cavs fans, I don't know why, but I mean, listen, I'm always very impressed with Cleveland and you guys' ability to watch all these games. I think other cities don't do it nearly as well as Cleveland does, especially when it comes to the Cavs and the Guardians. Like, there's a lot of people I know legitimately watch all 82 of these games. There's a lot of people I know for baseball watch all 162. But it felt like last night, you guys only watched the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, no. Well, yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean, it's so much of the discourse. Maybe all the interesting things happened in the final 2 minutes, but it felt like everyone just bypassed the whole first 3.5 quarters and how that game went down and the cape that Darius even put on to have you in that spot.
And I think in some of that, by the way, I think some of that is that final 3 minutes was so outrageous.
I mean, I can't wait to see the two-minute report because it was one of the worst officiated 2 minutes I think you'll ever see.
It was almost so bad you can't own it.
But it was like makeup calls, too, was the other part of that. So then you're losing it on one end, but then you're like, well, the Rockets do have a point there. And you lost sight of the whole entire thing. And then, like, when Donovan took the shot with 4.5 seconds left, I was ready to rail about that. That was just a bonehead decision in my mind. And then it turns around, and you know, obviously you have a whole other factor with the Darius side of things. It was wildly interesting, but I felt like everyone just watched the final 2 minutes.
216-474-0092. Let's get to Sloppy Joe. Sloppy Joe in Ohio. Sloppy Joe Ohio, as he's called. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, hi. How you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, listen, he missed those shots because he was spent. He had nothing left in his legs, and it showed, too, when he took the three-point shot from with 2 seconds left. He didn't even hit the back rim, so he was just spent. You guys are reading into it too much. He was just tired.
I think we both defended him there, Sloppy Joe Heil.
All right. Let you guys take care.
All right, you too.
You take care too, Sloppy Joe.
That's a Sloppy Joe right there.
I want to know how he came up with Sloppy Joe. We talked about adult nicknames.
No, I think he's Sloppy, and he's Joe.
Oh, no. I think that's how that works.
I think Joe's out there.
They're a little on the nose for his friends, right? They're not very creative. They're like, Joe, he's just always sloppy.
Oh, I was talking. I think maybe he's out having a good wet the whistle a little bit, and I think he's out there.
Well, I thought Jake might have wrote it wrong. He's actually Sleepy Joe.
He was a little punchy. He was asleep at the wheel because he completely heard the opposite of what
we said.
What we
said at all.
Yeah, both of us ended up defending Darius in that. I don't really know how you move on from that kind of call.
I don't know that you can.
Yeah. So,
Someone step on a duck.
But do you agree? Like, thank big you, picture, isn't it interesting, the reaction to Darius?
Well, I think it's going to be really interesting when we get to the postseason in particular. I think a lot of fans don't know what to do with Darius right now. Last year did a number for a lot of fans. And then now you fast forward to this year, and he's been playing like an all-star. But it's not as easy as just sweeping under the rug and say, okay, we're back to embracing you, and we're back to loving you. And there's so many people that built up so much sweat equity into Darius being great to then have him be what he was last year. Ask for the trade, not ask for the trade, whatever you want to make into it, and now here we are.
It's just wild that 41 insanely good games by Darius didn't erase the taste from last year, which last year's the fluke. Like, when we finally put that to bed, by the way.
Yeah,
last year,
I mean, the way that he's bounced back, yes, but I do think there is a segment of the fan base. But we'll have this with Jared Allen even, too, though.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to the postseason, who are you?
216-474-0092. How much stock do you put into Darius missing the two of the last three free throws in yesterday's loss to the Rockets? And more on how JP was right, or was he, about the Rockets game on 92.3 The Fan. I think where Darius needs the most credit isn't outside of Cleveland, it's in Cleveland. And I think last night highlights that. And I'm kind of relieved that you've kind of been like, yeah, I wasn't really that upset about it. And some of it really was just the flukishness of the game.
Listen, I'm as surprised as you are that this is my take, but that's how I felt after the game, and I just got to tell you how I feel. I mean, because I hyped up the game in and of itself, but Garland was not the problem in that game, and Garland helped erase the 19-0 deficit, and like I you shouldn't have been in that spot to begin with anyway. No, he's a 90% free throw shooter. It's okay.
And yeah, those are the two free throws he's missed within, I think, the final 3 minutes of a game this year at all. So,
but the weird part was he missed 5 in total yesterday. That was the weird part. You don't see that typically happen for such a good free throw shooter.
That actually kind of does lean into the fact that, you know, we had Sloppy Joe call earlier. And say,
I still call him Sleepy, but that's neither here nor there.
Sleepy, Sloppy, Slippy, whatever.
Slippy.
Definitely not one of the Seven Dwarfs, though. However, I do think, like, I think it kind of ties into the fact that maybe he was tired. Maybe that's a legitimate defense of him. We're at that part. I mean, what's so funny about the referees and they were awful last night all around. But,
yeah, I mean, Şengün basically murdered him, but that's fine. That's either here nor there.
But the Jared Allen push off, Şengün now has has replaced the whichever tallest Wagner twin in Hartenstein as like the most disliked EuroLeague player. by Cavs fans
but
after
that
last
Rockets
night.
Team is they're very dirty, Nick.
Yeah, they are. They are
across the board. They're yeah. They're a very dirty
Although,
team.
Tell me you didn't want Steven Adams on this team. Tell me after watching him last night, you weren't thinking to yourself, "Man, I'd love to have him play 20 minutes a night and just give people the business."
If I was casting a movie and I needed a villain and a bad guy, he's my pick.
What's wild about this is Jalen Green, also a little bit of a dirty player. That would mean we have to side with Cade Cunningham and their weird forever feud, which I refuse to do because that dude's also weird. Yeah.
Jalen Green, one spot ahead of Evan Mobley.
Yeah. Well, I still think we made the right decision. I think we all agree on that one. Yes.
Oh, no. I think they made the wrong decision. Yes. That's all I'm saying there.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. They chose first. But what's lost in all of this is Cavs are not playing well. They're not. And some of that is health. Some of that, I think, is we're just in the doldrums of January. And I know I've said this previously to, you know, after the Thunder loss. Like, this is the time of year where when these struggles happen, what Donovan said about Darius is most right. Yeah, this is when you want to happen. This is when if you were really charging hard the first 37 games, if you're going to have a dip, this is the time. The problem is it's also coinciding with a lack of health, and I think that's just disrupting their rhythm and the love fest.
Yeah, I mean, they were one of the healthiest teams in all the NBA, while they were also going through the weakest schedule in the NBA as well. So there's a lot of coincidences there that obviously aren't great if we move forward in the next month or so. What's going on with Mobley? Can we figure that out? I know they say a calf injury. I feel like there's something more that we just don't know about and they're not alluding to. They're so vague. I hate how vague the Cavs are when it comes to their injuries.
It's every team in town now.
I just hate it.
And here's the other thing.
How can he be gone for three games and we get like calf strain is the issue and that's it?
Can we just stop? Can we stop having calf strains? Because every time I think of it, I think of KD and Clay in 2018 or 2019. And it just makes me uneven. His upper lower leg. Say something really contradictory.
His upper lower leg.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's not his upper leg. Yeah, because that clearly
can't be the lower
but it's
leg.
It's not his lower leg because that's the Achilles. Like, you know, the midsection of the leg.
That would accomplish extreme vagueness that they seem like they're headed towards anytime they talk about this injury.
But I'm glad that we have come out as Darius defenders, although even great misses. I don't know about that there, Donovan. Allison and Westlake, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Real good. I'm on my way to work. I just wanted to call and comment and say, first of all, I think this Cavs season has been incredible. They are so much fun to watch, and they are having fun. Fans are having fun, and Garland missed baskets aren't even anything to think about. You know, they're human. Basketball players are human. People have off nights, tired. They travel a lot. I don't think that it's even anything to think about. It's sad to win a game. Especially by one point, I hate those kind of games because you're so close to winning and then you lose. I think Mobley is a little more concerning to me. I'd like to know what's going on with him. But anyways, I think they're doing great. I've been having a ball. I hope it continues.
Allison, great stuff.
Thank you, Allison.
Enjoy your day at work.
Other comment on last night?
Yeah.
A little too much Tristan Thompson for my liking.
That's why you need Steven Adams.
There was a lot of Tristan Thompson in that first quarter into the second quarter. A lot of Tristan Thompson.
Have I finally gotten you on the Dayron Sharp train?
No, I have a new name for you.
Is it just another iteration of Dayron Sharp? Because I'll be a little offended.
Larry Nance Jr., bring him back. Bring him home.
I don't think he can play anymore.
Bring him home.
Come on.
Bring him home.
He's Tristan.
Bring him home.
He's Tristan.
I can't watch Tristan. I can't watch him play basketball anymore.
No one should.
I can't. I think he got 13 minutes last night.
I think Larry Nance Jr. is the same guy. I'd rather a young guy.
I watched as they went. It was like a 7-minute stretch with TT on the floor, and I was like, this is too much.
Did you just want to corner the market for like 215-pound, 6'10" guys?
Can I do
that? Is that what we're doing?
Can we corner that market?
Like, what's the Cavs like? What's the Cavs' big profile? Slender man. Okay, no. All right. Just give me one fat big guy, right?
Fat big guy?
Well, I mean, Dayron Sharp isn't fat, but yeah, he's got a little.
It's hard to be Zion where you get fat and that big.
No.
It's hard.
That's a fat wing.
How much cardio they do?
Nobody wants a fat wing.
How much cardio they do, though? I think it's impressive almost when you get to be that big when you're that tall.
I think maybe what Dayron Sharp's need is maybe Mariah Mills can help him out there. Wolf in Cleveland, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it doing, guys?
Doing well, buddy. What you got for us?
Great. Hey, I hate the guys bad-mouthing Darius Garland. Remember, he came in as Robin to Colin Sexton, and he has shown so much improvement after improvement after improvement. The man is gorgeous. And when he goes and bring our game up like he's been doing, I cannot let one night make me think otherwise about him.
All right, Wolf, we appreciate you, buddy. He is gorgeous. Good for Darius.
That's I agree.
Good. That's
Go
a good blow-up right there.
Well, he's not on Jax's phone screen or for nothing, right?
That's true.
His background.
And here's the thing. If we had said, no, he's not, I mean, what kind of heels would we be? He's a great basketball player, deserves more credit, and you know what? Hella attractive as well. Good on you there, Darius.
Colin Sexton might be on the move, by the way. That's some of the rumors. Not to us, but just in general. An NBA trade. He's one of those players I still like to keep my eyes on. I like to still... It's not that I like to remember the Colin Sexton days. We put that in the rearview mirror. But I do like to follow Sexton still.
I have not Colin Sexton. I've not thought about him for 1 second. Unless Utah's playing us, I've not thought of him for 1 second. He has done nothing in Utah that has ever interested me.
Yeah, I bet you loved the Sexland thing, though, did you not?
Well, of course. Yeah, who am I?
Who didn't?
Yeah, but I thought more about Lauri Markkanen than I have Sexland or...
Well, that's the obvious one that got away.
The good one.
Yeah, that's the obvious.
What about the guy that just puts up great stats on a bad team? What about that one? Deion Shador in Cleveland, 92.3 The Fan, coming up in just about 6 minutes on The Fan.